Hot Business on Hot 102.7 with Jeremy Maggs and MoneyWeb.
Now, I don't need to tell you that buying a home is one of the biggest financial decisions that most South Africans will ever make. But could your bond approval end up by backfiring? A recent court case has put the spotlight firmly on what actually makes a property sale agreement binding, and it's a little bit more complicated than you think. So listen up as I talk to Renia Krik, who's Managing Director at Sentinel Homes. We're going to look at the legal and financial risks that buyers often overlook and why a simple misunderstanding could in fact cost you your deposit. So Renia, a very warm welcome and thank you very much indeed. Maybe let's start with that recent court ruling. Not everyone is aware of it. What did the case set out to do to prove, and why has it caused so much confusion? And if I'm not mistaken, even some backlash from buyers.
So, Jeremy, without turning this into too much of a legal lecture, there is a bit of uncertainty amongst attorneys and practitioners about when precisely a bond condition in an agreement of sale is fulfilled. Because, you know, the bond condition is a suspensive condition, so it's like a light switch. It's either on or off. And the contract is inchoate and unenforceable until the switch has been turned on. So the question is, when precisely does that switch turn on? Now, oftentimes the people who draft these contracts, and specifically these bond conditions, don't really keep pace with how property finance arrives at your doorstep. Even positive results arrive piecemeal, and two specific steps are very important. And the first one is the so-called approval in principle, which financiers issue once they've assessed the creditworthiness and affordability. And then the second document, which arrives later, which is the credit agreement quotation, called the pre-agreement statement and quotation, which is a regulated document. Now, the question is, if your bond condition says when the bond must be approved, then the contract is final, which one of those two steps is the approval? And there seems to be large uncertainty about that. And in these kinds of cases, you want to stipulate precisely so that you don't face the specter of potentially having to go to court and fight about it, which is costly, or perhaps losing your deposit as a rouwkoop under the breach clauses of the contract.
And fair to say that it's not realistic to expect everyday home buyers to know the difference between that AIP and the final loan agreement, which I guess begs the question, banks need to be more transparent here, and perhaps they're failing in that respect.
Well, I think the banks and all the credit providers, including us, are very clear about what we're doing and when. The real problem is that the contracts are insufficiently specific. And that obviously is not something that the banks really can regulate, because freedom of contract remains the law of the land. So what actually needs to happen, Jeremy, if I may differ from you on your own program, is that people need to seek appropriate legal advice from someone who knows what they're doing before they get into the large financial quagmire that could be the property buying process.
So what specific advice should they be seeking? What should they be asking their attorney?
Well, your attorney should review the contract before you sign it and should have a proper brief, especially if you're paying a deposit, which is then at risk if you don't do it properly. And you shouldn't just be taking advice from your Uncle Samuel, who bought a property once 14 years ago. It's also important to remember that everyone else involved in the transaction, the seller's conveyancer and the seller's estate agent, have their own incentives for being in this transaction. They also want to be paid. And so they're not necessarily giving you unbiased advice. Although that doesn't mean that they're not stand-up citizens. It just means that in commercial transactions, you should always have someone who is exclusively in your corner. And to do that in a property transaction, you're going to have to appoint an attorney to look at the contract.
Yeah, I think if I think back to my Uncle Samuel, Renia, his house was repossessed. So the last person that I should ever go to get advice. But let's push this a little bit further. Am I correct in saying then that the sale should only be binding after the buyer accepts the final loan quotation? If I've heard that correctly, is this something that banks or sellers are likely to agree to with a degree of ease?
Yeah, so I mean, it depends. Obviously, the buyer wants to have the opportunity to consider the terms and conditions proposed by the financier, which includes not only the interest rate, but it may also include other things in the fine print, like if one bank requires submission of approved building plans and the other bank may not perhaps do that. So you wanted an opportunity to consider. So from the buyer's point of view, you want the OTP to become binding and final. In other words, the suspense of condition to be fulfilled as late as possible in the home finance journey, which is after you have accepted the pre-agreement statement and quotation, as you're required to do by the National Credit Act. The seller has a competing interest, obviously, and would like for this deal to be final as soon as possible. And so finding that balancing is the normal sort of commercial thing that needs to happen in every commercial transaction.
So how much negotiating power do buyers have when it comes to these clauses, do you think, given that the market at the moment is fairly competitive?
Well, the buyer has all of the bargaining power because the buyer makes the initial offer, and sellers are unlikely to look with too much scrutiny at a small little word change such as the agreement is conditional upon the buyer accepting a quote from a bank rather than the buyer receiving an approval from the bank. That's likely to raise the unlikely to raise the specter of any even discerning seller in the market.
Now, what about deposits? Could buyers be misled then into thinking that their deposits are safe, and I use that word in inverted commas, until the very last minute, when in fact, and I think you might have alluded to this, they are already at risk in the first place?
Yeah, I mean, paying a deposit indicates that you're bound to the transaction and that you have every intention of cooperating and performing. And so that only really works if you have the possibility of losing it, right? So the contracts will contain clauses that say when the buyer's deposit or any portion thereof will be forfeited to the seller or used to pay the estate agent's commission or the attorney's costs. You must just, those clauses aren't necessarily oppressive. They're part of the normal transaction. You must just make sure that you understand them before you sign them. And I think that is good general advice to buyers in general.
And just a final question, absolutely take your point about seeking legal advice, but many buyers that are near simply can't afford that. So you've got to ask the question, could the process be skewed against lower and middle income buyers?
Yeah, well, I mean, Jeremy, that is a very difficult question, and that is one for the regulator, I think. But the fact is that this is true of every commercial transaction, right? Some people will buy a car and first send the contract to their attorney, while others won't necessarily have the means to do so. And so, unfortunately, when these kinds of consequences or adverse consequences arise, they very often impact largely on people who are poorer or of less financial means. And so it's a pity, but unfortunately, that's part of venturing into commerce, you know, is that some people just have more resources than other people and tend to reap the rewards of those resources.
Best advice here, just read the small print, man, and just make sure that you get some legal advice whichever way you can. This is very, very valuable advice. Rania Crick, thank you very much indeed. Managing Director at Sentinel Homes, thank you for joining me on Hot Business.
Thanks for having me.
Hot Business on Hot 102.7 with MoneyWeb.